Elizabeth Barrett is a wife, mother, grandmother, licensed marriage and family therapist, educator, eavesdropper, and emotion worker. She uses all of these skills to address the subjects that we all struggle with in this conversation with the reluctant therapist. Good afternoon, Elizabeth.
Good afternoon, Chris.
Elizabeth, what did you have in mind for today?
Well, you know, Chris, I have been doing a lot of work around this idea that I think we need to change our story, and I think we need to start looking for some sort of miracle. You know how when you get something in your mind and then a song pops in with that idea that you have in your mind and then you can't get rid of the song? So this song has been playing in my head over and over again since I decided that today's show topic is going to be on the idea of revisioning our story or coming up with a new way to think about our lives. So this Grateful Dead song is stuck in my head, and now I hope it's stuck in yours too.
Mission accomplished.
Thank you. So, okay, why the show today? First, let me say, yes, I voted. And, you know, in case anyone's looking for my sticker or some sign that I did, yes, I did. But I purposely have gone another direction with today's show because I feel saturated, which I imagine you do also, with all the election information. And I know we have hours and hours of election coverage coming your way today. So I thought, let's like move in a different direction and start thinking post-election, something outside of the election story. And also, I feel the cultural anxiety. It's palpable. I just want you to know that I feel you every day, and the sense of angst or nervousness or anticipation, all that generalized anxiety that makes us, you know, run to our therapist or crawl back into bed and put the pillow over our head or run, you know, 45 miles on the treadmill. I mean, all the ways that we tend to cope with that anxious feeling, that sense of impending doom or anticipation, whatever it is. I feel that anxiety and I feel it amping up. And so I thought, you know, maybe today we need to have a little bit of good old fashioned community therapy. Spend some time kind of bringing down the anxiety level if possible. So if you're game, we're going to start off just by taking a couple breaths, just like I do when I'm with my students or I'm with clients or I'm at home with nervous children. I just need you to kind of take a breath or two and calm down your central nervous system. It'll make the driver next to you happy. It'll make your kids feel better when you pick them up after school. But it's funny how often we don't do the obvious thing to help ourselves cope, which is to slow down our breathing a little bit and just settle in. And, you know, I'm not suggesting if you're driving that you close your eyes, but if you're in a place that you can close your eyes for a moment and allow the breath to come. And notice if there's tension in your chest. That means that you're probably breathing in a hyperventilative state. And try to drop that breath down to your belly. And our poor belly gets no respect, right? We're always just after it, either feeding it full of probiotics or holding it in or doing crunches. So just let the belly relax and breathe into the nice softness of your belly with your eyes closed. Just feel what it feels like to breathe in and breathe out. Breathe in. Breathe out. You don't have to do anything spectacular. You don't have to do a big deep breath or anything over the top. Just really natural inhalations and exhalations are the best. And with each breath, you might notice that at first your heart rate speeds up. And that's because your nervous system isn't used to being calm, that most of us live in this heightened state of anxiety all the time. And so when we initially start to kind of slow down and notice our breath, our body thinks that we're dying. And so our heart rate speeds up. And so you have to stay with that breath a little bit. Stay with the breathing in and breathing out until your heart rate calms down. And then you get to kind of the beneficial piece. And we've been doing this for, you know, about a minute now so far, and you should, if you're staying with that breath, start to feel a little more calm, a little more centered, a little more focused, and maybe able to take in new information. And, you know, this simple task of spending a minute or two, just breathing in and breathing out with some mindfulness can work wonders in helping us to cope with stressful situations or with the sense of impending doom or the sense of overwhelm. You know, when we can calm down our nervous system, we can deactivate the, you know, reptilian fight or flight part of our brain and tap into that part of our brain that is able to problem solve and is able to cope with things that are overwhelming. But because most of us live in this heightened state of anxiety all the time because of the pace of our lives or the state of the world, that we tend to be in a state of hyperventilation in our breath all day long. And to find the time to just breathe in and breathe out, to expand your belly and contract your belly, to count as you breathe in and count as you exhale, to really focus your mind's eye just for a minute or two. It doesn't have to be forever. It can make a huge difference. And if you can teach this to your children or do this with your spouse before you have a long conversation, you know, anything to kind of bring your power back to your thinking brain instead of your reactive brain. So we're all good right now? Had a couple breaths? You feeling better, Chris?
Good enough.
Because I know I do this to you every time you work with me, as I throw things at you and throw you deer in the headlights. And so the breathing is for you.
you're too kind.
And so the other reason I wanted to do a little community therapy is because we've come to a point now where I think we have gotten ourselves steeped in this feeling of overwhelm. I think there's a lot of fear. There's a lot of frustration. There's a lot of hopelessness and anger and a lot of sense of being ill at ease or being diseased. And I feel like as a community, as a culture, we are stuck. We're actually stuck in this space, this kind of eddying around a lot of despair. And it's not surprising, because if you pay any attention to the news outside of, you know, what's going on today, the news on a general basis is never really good news. And that's no surprise, but we hear about, you know, climate destruction and environmental destruction and how, you know, children are struggling with school and pressure and suicide rates are up and families are struggling and, you know, we have mental health issues. I mean, it goes on and on, right? You know where I'm going with this. But I think we've gotten to such a point of overload that there is this kind of universal mindset that the end is near, that we have this overwhelming feeling that, you know, that end, the world is coming to an end sign. The guy walking around with it now doesn't seem so silly. I think there's a lot of people that are feeling that way. And it's not a healthy way to be, especially if you're a parent or a grandparent. And it's not a healthy way to be if you're an individual who's young and looking forward to the future. I think, you know, for a lot of elderly people who are looking towards the end of their lives, there also is this feeling that you can't imagine the world going on without you, because if you're dying or leaving this planet, right, your ego dies too. And so there's this sense of the world is coming to an end. But I think we've had enough of it, you know, and if you look at the television shows and just the constant message, it's just too much. And part of the reason that it's too much is because we've lost our ability to hear the other side of the story. Because I don't care what the story is, nothing in life is ever all bad or all good. Nothing. You know, everything is steeped in a little bit of both. Ideally, we live somewhere kind of in the middle between acknowledging that there's a lot of bad and acknowledging that there's a lot of good, and hopefully just kind of riding that middle. But I think we've gotten so dark that we've lost the ability to see the things that are actually bright or light out there. And it's all around the story that we're living, whatever the myth or the story is that we've bought into. And the story that we've bought into that's sold to us through the media or through our Facebook page or through our Google News or however it is you get your information. And I don't care what the source is, every sense of where you're getting your information is more doom and gloom than ever before. And the problem with this is if we stop understanding that there is another story, or if we stop having the ability to envision a different story, then then we get stuck and stagnate in our own feelings. We feel greater senses of depression, a greater sense of anxiety, a greater sense of hopelessness. And then we tend to move to the next step, which is, I can't deal with that, so I'll numb myself to it. And then we're stuck. A little bit about, you know, how we talked about it last week. So for this week, I want you to put on your imaginal thinking cap. And I'm going to present to you what we call in the trades the miracle question. It's the cornerstone of solution-focused therapy. And I'm not by training a solution-focused therapist, but I've done a lot of, it's also called brief therapy. I've done a lot of it in my time because thanks to managed care and the limited amount of time we get to see clients today, many clinicians utilize solution-focused therapy to get to the issues quickly because we have so little time with our clients. But I'm going to present to you this miracle question. And I want you to think about it, and then I want you to call with your response. I want to hear where you go with this miracle question, because my premise today is that what we need to do is start envisioning what the next phase of our world looks like. We have to bounce out of the problem-saturated story and into envisioning whatever this Eden, this next possibility is, because the more people that live this vision of what is possible, the more ability we have of creating what that future looks like. But right now, we don't have enough people with vision moving us in that direction. And that's what's slowing down our progress. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. You can find out more about the show on our Facebook page, The Reluctant Therapist. You can listen to previous shows at kcbx.org or podcast our shows through iTunes if you want to keep up or catch up with other shows. And you can always send me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. Our phone number is 805-781-3875 to be part of the conversation. And I'm going to talk to Jeremy first because he was right on the phone. And then I'm going to tell you the miracle question. So Jeremy, you jumped in ahead, but I'm dying to hear what you got for me today. Are you there? I can hear Jeremy somewhere. Jeremy, you stay there and hold and we'll come back to you. Oh, are you there, Jeremy? Nope. All right. Can you put him on hold, Chris, for me? Thank you. All right. So let's jump into the miracle question. So solution-focused therapy, just a little. Oh, are you there, Jeremy? Jeremy? There we go. Hopefully Jeremy will call back. all right, solution-focused therapy. It's been around since the late 70s, early 80s. It was started by Steve DeShazar and his wife, Insoo Kimberg, and they're from Milwaukee. And they started looking at this way of working with clients to get out of the kind of problem saturated stories, because therapy up until that point really focused on all the ways that things weren't going well. We focused on all the ways that people felt broken and tried to fix all of their neuroses or pathologies and help, you know, to boost them back up. But what they found was that one, took way too long, and two, quite often people never healed from or changed or, you know, in a fundamental way corrected those things about their lives that they weren't happy with. And so they recognized that if they could start focusing on the ways that people's lives were actually going well, or strengths that they had, or help them to start envisioning solutions to the ways they felt their problems were holding them back, that they could jump to possibilities of a new future and kind of move in that direction. So that's the basic foundation of solution-focused therapy. And so, as I said, the cornerstone is this miracle question. And the miracle question is all about goal setting or re-envisioning or revisioning new possibilities. So here we go. Imagine that after our conversation and your whole afternoon enjoying the warmth and sunshine, and you get home and you have your dinner and you enjoy your evening, however that may be, and you finally get on your jammies and you curl up and you go to bed. And as you're sleeping tonight, while you are dreaming away, a miracle occurs. And you wake up in the morning and everything has changed. What would be different in your world? How would you know this miracle had occurred? And that's simply what it is. So take a moment to imagine that. You wake up tomorrow and a miracle has occurred and all of your problems, all of your concerns have been alleviated. What would be different in your life? How would you know this miracle had occurred? And I ask this on many levels, from your personal life, individually, You wake up tomorrow and your problems have vanished. Those things that keep you up at night generally have now disappeared. What would be different? How would you know that miracle had occurred? And maybe you're thinking about it from your family's level or from your community's experience or from our global experience. How would you know this miracle had occurred? 805-781-3875 is the number to be part of the conversation and a part of my experiment here with community therapy. Because we haven't done any community therapy for a long time. It's been a long time since I just opened up the phones and said, where are you at today? But I'm curious to know, because I think if we can work together to imagine this fantastical different world, we can start to get there. And so I'll tell you a little bit about mine. So if I woke up tomorrow and a miracle had occurred, here's what I envision would be different. We'd be green. Things would be wet and lush and green. I would be able to eat and drink anything I wanted on a regular basis without having any repercussions to my health and well-being. There would be more respect for the natural world and a concern for all other Indigenous peoples. My children would look forward to their future with great hope because there would be enough jobs to support their lifestyle, simple lifestyle, nothing too elaborate. My husband and I would have a little more free time to sit and talk at night about things that we care about and not just feel rushed. My vision for this miraculous new future is not too grandiose, but it's green. That's all I keep thinking is when I imagine this world, it's very green and lush, and the natural world has taken back a lot of what urbanization has done. So that's a little bit of my imaginal thinking. Jeremy, are you back with me? Hi, Jeremy. I can hear him. Oh, I don't know why I keep losing him, though. All right. So that's a little bit of my imaginal thinking. This is going to be tough if I can't hear Jeremy. Jeremy, give us one more try. 805-781-3875 is the number to call to be part of the conversation. So this imaginal thinking, the reason that I also wanted to give you the miracle question, even if you don't take the time to call in, is because it's a powerful way to set in motion change in your life. Because if you really allow yourself to get big with the miracle question, I mean, really big, go way out there to fantastical thinking, things that you don't even think you could imagine, you know, that all people of all nations would sing together kumbaya with their hands held across the world. I mean, whatever that is, if you envision it, we have a better chance of making that happen than we do being, you know, we have as much chance of making that happen as we do being stuck where we are in this space. Because all of us every day really just live the story we're told to live, right? We're told that mental health and mental illness is a disease. And if you're told that enough, then you start to buy that story and you start to live that story out, that every time you feel anxious or depressed or unsure or insecure, you immediately believe that you're the problem. But what if the story you were told every day was, you know what, you're going to feel these feelings, and they may last for a while, they may be gone in a short amount of time, but they're normal. Everyone experiences them in some way. How would you behave differently if everything you were told about yourself was different? If everything you'd been told about yourself was not true? What if what we told couples was not that all relationships, 50% of them, end in divorce? What if we told every couple getting married, you know, only 19% of all couples actually get divorced? How would that change how you approached your marriage and your relationships? Would that change the way you behave towards each other? Would that change the way you envisioned your future? Because too many couples today get married with kind of this idea, well, I'll be committed to it as long as things are going well. And as soon as it kind of goes bad, because 50% of all marriages go bad, then I'll jump. Now, that mindset alone already predicts what the future is going to look like, because we know all marriages have times when they struggle or when they suffer or when people have a hard time. And so What if you were told that you're going to have tough times, but 19% will get divorced and the rest will thrive and do well? How would you behave differently? The same with our families. How would you behave differently if instead of believing that all families struggle, that all families have financial problems, that there isn't, you know, a future for our kids, that we need to press our children to do well in school so they can get a good job? What if you were told, you know what? Families themselves are healthy, wholesome places for children to grow up in, and they will find their way. How would that change the way you behaved? So we're talking about the miracle question today, and at this point, I'm hoping the miracle is someone can talk to me. Nick, are you there? Hi. I'm starting to feel like the gods are working against me today. All right, so I'll continue on with my miracle imagination story. Who do we have there? Oh. Chris, then why don't you talk to me for a moment here?
Yeah. All righty. Here I am. Good afternoon, Elizabeth.
So what's going on?
You mean with, like, phones?
Mm-hmm.
Haven't the foggiest idea. I don't even have a murky idea. But we're trying to get the people who know what the idea is.
Okay.
In the meantime, I'm not one of them. But
so I'm just curious, though.
Oh, but hey, look at that. Bree is here.
But Chris, for all the people that are talking, you can take their answer, right? Even if they can't talk to me? All right. Well, this is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. Today, we're talking about the stress and anxiety that many of us are feeling and experiencing this time in our lives. Because of all the bad news we hear on a regular basis, because of the story we're told that the world is coming to an end as we know it, that no matter what happens after today, it's going to be a long, torturous journey ahead. And it's interesting because one of the reasons that I got kind of excited about this show is that I've been hearing a lot of shows in the last week or so that talk about the history of elections. And even though I said I wasn't going election, I'm going to have to at this moment, that the history of our country, you know, has been fraught with nasty elections and times where we felt like we were on the brink as a country or that our democracy was threatened. And that for 200 years, we kind of keep rewriting the story and we keep righting the ship and moving forward. And if you think about it, where we were 200 years ago on so many levels is far better today than it was when we started this experiment as a country, that we really, if anything, should have an incredible sense of idealism about where we are. And that this idea of asking the miracle question of ourselves would help us envision what the next 100 years looks like. Because I think we're so stuck in all the ways that we lament how things have changed. We lament what's changed in our environment. We lament what's changed in opportunities for our children. Like we spend so much time lamenting how what we've lost, we fail to recognize all the gains we've made. Now, 144 years ago, is that the right? I wonder if that's right, 114 years ago, 1920, can't do my math quick enough. You know, the suffragettes finally won the right to vote after, you know, 80 years of struggle to get the right to vote. And would any of those women have imagined that today we'd have the opportunity to, you know, vote a woman into the presidency or we'd have women in any elected offices? That's a huge stride. And so I encourage you to think about it on many levels. Look at how our air quality has changed since the 1970s, even when we started changing how vehicles operated. I mean, there's a lot of ways that we're in a far different and improved place. People are living longer, healthier lives. We understand more about nutrition. And so I think, you know, we can't allow ourselves to get steeped and stuck in this place of despair. Because if we do, we can't envision where we go next. And without a vision of where we go next, we have no future. Because all we've got is the vision of where we're going next. We have to, it's the word, you know, we have to imagine where we're off to next. And I'm going to imagine that Margie, you'll magically be there when I say, hi, Margie, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Oh, my gosh, you caught me chewing.
Mm. That's right. I'm glad I caught you at all. What's on your mind today?
Yes. Mm. Excuse me. I hope this is okay because my miracle is a personal one and a family. Not having to do with my family.
Absolutely, because that's why I said I want to hear your miracle question on any level, wherever it strikes you.
My miracle would be that I would wake up in the morning when the sun comes up, and I would feel calm and peaceful and hopeful. That I would not wake up in the morning when the sun comes up and feel a rise of anxiety mm-hmm. that comes up through my body, and that I have to breathe and use tools that I know to use to get rid of that. The second thing that would be the miracle would be that my two adult grandsons, who are afflicted with mental illness and addiction, would miraculously be okay.
Mm-hmm.
It would be over.
And how would this miracle make a difference in your life?
Oh, my goodness. I wouldn't have a knot in my stomach. I wouldn't have tears in my eyes like I do right now, but I don't all the time. I really have quite a wonderful life in many ways. I do a lot of good things, a lot of things that I really enjoy. I'm a musician and performer. I love that. But they're my guys, you know?
So
and when they were little, I helped raise them, and it's just so sad, so sad.
I hear that in your voice. And
yeah.
I think what you're talking about is what would be different is that this kind of low-level sense of sadness that
yes.
weighs you down daily
yes.
would be relieved.
It reminds me of, and I've spoken this to people that I talk with, the character in Peanuts, who mm-hmm. I think it's Pigpen, maybe, and he has that cloud of dust that follows him around, cloud. And there just is a lot of the time in my life where I have that cloud, and I have to say, go away, cloud, and or whatever phrase I can use. But it's a sadness in our family, and I am the matriarch of our family. So.
And how would you treat the rest of the family differently if this cloud wasn't there?
Well, we are a very, very expressive and affectionate family and a very forgiving. I'm very proud of my family.
Mm-hmm.
Very forgiving family, and we do not judge. We try not to. I would be even more non-judgmental, forgiving, kind, loving, all of those kinds of things, the kind of matriarchal grandmother that... to 12, that even more. I would just find a way to do that even more and to give to others, too, in the same way.
And so, Margie, here's my challenge to your miracle, then.
Okay.
I challenge you to take one person in your family system
mm-hmm.
and pour some of that extra love on them.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
For 3 weeks.
Okay.
And see how that changes. Because we can't get rid of the cloud, right? Because you can't fix the boys as much as you
no.
want to. You can just be there.
They're men.
They're men, right? But how do we give a little break from the cloud? And I think mm-hmm. pouring some of that love you just described on someone else in the system, just a little extra that they're not even expecting to get, see how that changes what that mood feels like just a little bit.
That's a wonderful idea.
Thank you for calling.
And it's quite interesting because one member of my family that I haven't been able to spend much time, he is also a male, but not a man yet. I have been taking out to different concerts and things, and I have been spending more time with him, and that would be the person right there.
So you already knew the answer, and we're doing it.
Well. I'm pretty good at distracting myself, but I just was really, I appreciate what you're talking about right now so much. because especially on this day.
We need to imagine the next world, right? The next,
next
life. Margie, thank you for taking the time
to call.
You saved my afternoon. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. Our number is 805-781-3875. It's safe to call. Jeremy, we'd love to hear from you. Give it another shot, 805-781-3875. I started the conversation today talking about this miracle question, which is at the cornerstone of solution-focused therapy. It's one of the primary tools that we use to help clients revision problem-saturated lives, to start thinking greater than they've ever thought before and start envisioning where they'll be post-problem instead of being mired in all the steps it's going to take to get out of the problem. Because I think what keeps us stuck in this space of feeling overwhelmed or lost or frustrated or hopeless is that we know in our heart that there's so many steps towards getting to a place of healing, and then we just retreat. But what if we just skipped over all the steps and we imagine what this world looks like, or your life looks like, or your relationship looks like post the problem? You go to sleep tonight and a miracle occurs, and when you wake up tomorrow morning, everything has changed. What would be different in your life, and how would you know this miracle had occurred? 805-781-3875. Hi, Ivan, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Hi, Elizabeth. This is Ivan calling.
Hi.
We spoke last week. I was the last caller to call with had a question about hope.
Oh, yes.
Remember we talked about that? I quoted Stanley Elkin, who said hope is an eternal, nothing is eternal.
Yes.
Okay, good. I have a manipulative question to ask you first.
Okay.
You ready?
I'm a little nervous, but okay.
Okay. What are the first two lines of One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest?
I have no idea.
Okay, I'll tell you the answer. They're out there, black boys in white coats.
Okay.
Pretty heavy, huh?
Yes. So is that your future vision?
No, that's my past. 50 years ago, this month, I had a, I'll call it a religious experience now, but I went to San Francisco County Hospital. I was asked if I'd ever taken LSD. I answered truthfully to the intake worker. I took it once. I was tied down. I was forced to have 2,400 milligrams of fluoroxin a day. That's 600 four times a day. Pretty rough stuff, huh?
Oh, more than rough.
More than rough, right? I did the thoroxin shuffle. I did the thoroxin crawl, if you know what I'm saying. So when I say my belief is I don't believe in miracles, I know miracles every day. I live in the town of Halcyon, California. My address, for anyone in the world who wants to know it, is 1652 Hiawatha Street. Actually, it isn't street, it's just Hiawatha. You're familiar with Halcyon, of course.
Well, I am. So I want to jump ahead because I don't want to cut off your story, but I'm curious, are you saying that you're living that miracle?
I'm living that miracle every second of the day.
Because you survived hell and are here to tell it.
Well, I wrote a song about it, which will be all over the world in the next week. I used to suffer from delusions of grandeur. Now I am merely grandiose.
Well, Ivan, I hope that you will send me a copy of that song so I can hear it when it comes up. Because I'd love to know where you go with that music. So don't forget that if you want to get in contact with me, the number is, my address is email elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. We'll be back to take your calls. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. And today's topic is the idea of the miracle question and how it works with solution-focused therapy. And this idea that I started off with at the top of the hour is that we needed to take a little time for a little community counseling, because the anxiety level that we're all feeling individually, as couples, as families, as a community, is off the charts. And I know that we're all having a tough time kind of just relaxing it all right now, no matter what the issue is, whether it's election day or what's happening in the environment or what's happening in our communities or financial system. I get that. But here's the dilemma. We can't just shut it all down. We can't just shut everything down in our system. We can't shut ourselves down. I mean, we can do a masterful job of numbing ourselves. We have those alternatives. We can numb ourselves in many ways through video games or through food or sex or alcohol or drugs. I mean, there's a lot of ways we can just shut it down and be numb. But ultimately, there are a lot of people on this planet and a lot of people that are hopeful, which is the word that I didn't want to use last week. This week, there's a lot of people that are counting on us coming up with a way to make this world that we've created workable for everyone. And so I lean a little bit on this idea of solution-focused counseling or solution-focused therapy to come together as a group, all of us, and try to envision a world that's different. And as Margie said, and maybe not the whole world, but maybe start with our own family system and to try to think of and imagine what it would be like if all those problems that hold us back or weigh us down were suddenly alleviated. And what would your world look like if you were to go to sleep tonight and wake up tomorrow and those things that weigh you down are no longer there? I want you to take a moment to imagine what your world looks like. How would you know if you woke up tomorrow that a miracle had occurred? What would be different? 805-781-3875 is the number to be part of the conversation. You know, and I think about it in kind of a general way. You know, the miracle question only works if we're willing to be fantastical in the thinking, right? Like for my part, as always, I would be able to eat or drink anything I wanted every day and pay no repercussions, that I would still be healthy and strong and fit and life would be grand. That's my greatest miracle of all, because I've always had that struggle with, you know, food and when I can eat and how much I can eat and that thing that kind of weighs me down. That would be my personal miracle at this point. That would alleviate a struggle. You know, for my family, for that miracle, I would think that we would be living together in a way that was closely connected, that we got to see each other every day, to have dinner and talk about our lives and sharing our experiences. That would be miraculous to me, that we wouldn't be kind of bogged down with the day-to-day necessities of having to make a living and pay our mortgage. Those kind of miracles. And when we get to the fantastical end of it, then we can start actually looking at small ways that we can create that future that we imagine. 805-781-3875. Hi, Karen, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Hi. Well, we all have our answers, I guess. And it's not an answer, it's just an idea.
Yes.
If there was some sort of schooling somewhere in school, somewhere that everybody could start learning to love themselves, mm-hmm. and understanding their potential and trusting their intuition, this whole world, I think, would perhaps benefit quite a bit. Because can you imagine if everybody was going around fulfilling their own potential and enjoying their life and loving themselves? How could you not love everybody else?
So your miracle is you wake up tomorrow and the world is full of self-love,
yes.
that then emanates from them to
yes.
everyone around them.
I would enjoy the world like that.
Well, and it's interesting because you make a good point that it's easy to love people who feel good about themselves because they emanate this energy that you want to be around.
Yeah.
So that would be miraculous. All right. So my challenge then is, are you living that love for yourself?
I'm sure working at it because I feel like it's really important.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't, you know, when I question and I question and I question and I question, it seems to me that it really comes down to that is the ultimate question.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the ultimate thing that I need to do for myself. I might be the only one who feels this way, but if I did that for myself, I question if a lot of people did it, how would this world look?
And I doubt that you're the only one. I would imagine that that's a fundamental feeling for many people, this fight to really be self-accepting.
Self-accepting, and then, you know, it kind of causes you to be a little bit more fearless in trusting your intuition to go forth with the ideas that come into your life of, you know, the potential that you may have. You know, I just think that self-love can cause you to go out and have a lot of courage to do just about anything. Love other people, love what you're doing in life, create changes.
And also, with that self-love, we have a lot less need for stuff. And we have a lot less need, right, to purchase things that promise to help us love ourselves.
Oh, yeah, that's true. That's a really good thought.
So you're actually envisioning that Eden, right, one step over the world we're in now. I like that. So then the challenge, Karen, is you bring that self-love and you emanate, you know, that out to other people who will absorb and go, when one of two things, and here's what's weird. Why is it in women culture, and I think it's unique to women, when women are feeling great about themselves, the other women in the group tend to think, who does she think she is?
Yes.
So the greater miracle step even is to have people have self-love and self-acceptance and be supported in that by the community and not judge for feeling good about ourselves, because that would be another
step. And you know, that brings me to a line that I really love that
Mandela, yes.
There's nothing enlightening about shrinking so that other people won't feel insecure around you.
There you go. And to be supported in the non-shrinking. Karen, thank you for taking the time to call. And Rick, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Hi, how are you?
Better now that I can talk to people.
Yes, I was listening. You were having difficulty. I was on my way voting, and I was hearing you on the radio. You're speaking to something I've been thinking about for a long time.
Okay.
Maybe I would share it.
Please do.
One, we seem to be absent, if you will, some sort of unified, globalistic, now that I think we're probably into becoming a global community, we don't seem to have a mission, a journey. And as we move away from maybe nationalistic goals and desires and motivations like the United States had in the 50s and 60s and 70s, we seem to be absent what we're going to do as a global community.
So start being the visionary, Rick. What do you envision?
Well, thank you. What I looked at is we're currently living under a system, I call it the business model, which business is telling government how to write the rules, and humanity has to obey, and never mind the environment. That's not totally true, but the point is it's a model.
It is a model, and I hear your story, and I would agree that that's part of our story.
Yes. Second thing I did is I started thinking about, well, what's important to me? What's the most valuable thing in the world to me? And perhaps others. So we have a common bond. And after many months of thinking about it, weeks and going around, 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 I kind of came up with this idea that the most valuable thing in the world to most of all of us is our next breath.
Okay.
And pretty odd, but I thought, you know, that's about as basic as it gets. The second thing would be maybe water.
True.
And the next thing would obviously be food. And so that took me to an idea, where does all that come from? The environment. So obviously, the environment must be the most precious thing to us. We just don't know it. We don't have a culture. We don't have a mantra. We don't have a paradigm that reinforces that. So what we do is we stutter around thinking that all these gadgets and things and whatever we're chasing, we don't have a common goal. And I think if we realized how dependent we are on our environment and begin to teach our kids, change society in that way, how important it is, we might come up with a human model instead of a business model. And I thought the human model might look more like the first thing would be the environment. And us as humans, whatever we do to the environment, we do to ourselves. So we're very closely linked to the environment.
True. So I'm going to jump in, Rick, because I have other calls I have to get to. So I hate to cut you short.
I'll hurry. The thing is that I think that, you know, environment first, humanity second. Humanity tells government how to write the rules, and rules tell business how to comply, which basically comes down to the fact they can make anything they want, and they're entitled to a reasonable profit, but they can't make anything that harms humanity or the environment. That's a human model. It's grounded in life.
I love that. And I think that miracle vision is kind of where we have to be on a global scale. Like, I need Rick and all of the Ricks to keep having these visionary thoughts. So you're talking about a new model, and you call it the human model as opposed to the business model. So how do we get there? Keep fleshing that out. What does that look like? What has to change? What is one small thing we do as an individual or community to live that human model? And the more people that live that model, the more we move closely to a global change of some sort. But I like that idea of changing that model, that myth. And, you know, I've been talking about the last few weeks, my interview with Daniel Quinn, who is the author of Ishmael. And if you haven't read Ishmael yet, please do, because I'm going to be airing my interview with him in the next few weeks. And Ishmael really addresses, Rick, what you're talking about and kind of revisioning the mythology that drives our culture as we know it today. So Ishmael by Daniel Quinn. 805-781-3877. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. You're listening to Public Radio, KCBX. And Miranda, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Hi, Elizabeth. Thank you very much. I love this conversation about miracle vision. It's something that I've used in my life for many years to just try to manifest anything. You can create anything, and knowing that is very empowering.
Yes.
But more lately, I think what I've realized is, for me, the most miraculous thing is understanding that we have personal responsibility for everything in our reality, not just, you know, or what's going to happen in my life today and what my relationships are and where I live and my workplace, but really what's happening on the other side of the planet, even if it feels very ugly and very difficult and very full of conflict. And I've always kind of avoided looking at the news because I just feel so bad that my life is good compared to other people being so bad. And more lately, I've realized what the miracle is, actually understanding that I am part of that creation of, you know, Syrian refugees or something that's very difficult. And I don't think about it anymore in a guilty way. I think it's much more empowering to think, okay, I have responsibility for creating that picture, and therefore I also have the power to change that within myself. And whatever that means to you, it could be through a meditation or just through imagining something better. But just to say, okay, I am part of this full global picture because I'm in it, and therefore I'm creating it. And so, therefore, by working on the issue within myself from an empowered perspective, I think that's where we can all make the biggest change. Bring it from our, you know, from out of the world to our community, to our family is a good thing. But bringing it right into your own self where you can work on it there, I think that's where I start to wake up and feel so much lighter and bigger about being able to create anything in my world.
So if I'm hearing you correctly, it's a little bit more of not trying to deny what's out there, but to really look at it and accept it as part of the human condition. Because I think that's part of our story that gets us into trouble, is that we have this belief or this thought that there should never be any suffering or there should never be any trouble. And so our thought that that should never occur means that when it does occur, we try to avoid it or deny it or extinguish it from our thoughts, instead of embracing the suffering as much a part of the human experience as the joy or privilege that you're experiencing, and to somehow be able to have both things living inside of us at the same time.
And to know that you can transform it within yourself. So that whatever picture you're looking at, everybody has a different one, but you can transform that internally. You don't have to wait for something miraculous to appear in front of you on the outside of yourself, but that whatever there is, you can work on it internally, and you can take responsibility for creating something so much bigger and better. And that's, to me, what miracle thinking is all about.
Yes, that miracle question. So, Miranda, what is your personal daily vision for change?
So my personal daily vision is, when I wake up, my human side comes in and says, oh, what do I have to do today? I have to get this together and have a very busy life like many of us. And it's just my ability to stop before I even get out of bed and say, wait a minute, what do I really want to create for this day? What reality would I like to lay out in front of myself? And for each of us to know that anything is possible. For me personally, that just looks like being able to walk out into the world, no matter what it looks like, with a really bright, positive aspect, and to be a pinpoint of light for others wherever I go, no matter what reality is, just to be as positive as possible. That's my miracle vision.
Beautifully said, Miranda. Thank you for taking the time to call.
Thank you very much.
So that's inspiring, because we've had two fairly similar visions to the miracle question. And, you know, not as much about like specific changes, although the natural world for Rick becoming a bigger part of our mission statement. I like the idea of creating a global mission statement, you know, and you can back that down too, to your family, to your community, to your family, to yourself, that if we have some sort of vision, a mission statement about what directs our life and how we will inform our lives, then that helps to move us in a direction of change. But if you're feeling stuck in your life as it is, or in your sense of hopelessness for the future, this idea of the miracle question, of really allowing yourself to brainstorm what would that beautiful world look like, to envision it, to paint pictures of it, to have your children paint pictures or do finger painting or make collages, and to actually create pieces of art of what that vision for what our world will look like when we move past this problem-saturated story that we're living today, that's very much about global destruction and business and corporation power and corporate power. I don't believe that this is the end of our story. I believe this is a story that has dominated our culture or our world for hundreds of years, if not thousands of years. But that dominant power structure is shifting, which is why things feel so unstable and out of control and constantly shifting. And whenever things are fundamentally changing, it's an earthquake of change. It's not subtle or soft. So my thought is that we are moving to a new global vision or a new global story, whether you're part of it or not, but better that you're all a part of it, right? Better that you're using your own visionary skills to envision and create, take charge, like Miranda said, of creating what this next world looks like. Because if we fail to have vision as people, if we hand over that vision to corporations or to the government, if we stop, you know, imagining a different world, then we will be stuck with whatever's handed to us next. In our personal life, in our community life, in our global life, right? If we don't create and move towards a new way of being in our lives, then we're stuck with whatever life we're told to live. Just as if you're feeling anxious and depressed and feel like you're broken, you're stuck with the story that the experts tell you about feeling anxious and depressed, unless you start to revision what that anxiety and depression is in your life and how you will move out of the problem saturated story of anxiety and depression and envision your life without those feelings being a problem. And I'm not promising you would never feel anxious or depressed again. What I'm saying is that envision your life when feeling anxious and depressed are not a problem. If you were to wake up tomorrow and these feelings were not a problem, how would you be different? How would you act? What would be different in your life? And when you can create a vision of what your life would be like if anxiety and depression were not the story you told about yourself, then you have a shot at moving to that spot. And it's the same in all areas of our life. 805-781-3875. In our last few minutes of talking about the miracle question and envisioning that miracle. And what do you think of this idea that if we each had a vision of self-love or hope for the future, and we spread that light out to others, would the light overcome the darkness? If enough people were to feel the sense of illumination in themselves, would your illumination illuminate others? And is it just a matter of retelling the story that we're living? Right now we live a story of destruction and despair and fear and anger and hate. But what if we woke up tomorrow morning and our story was one of love for each other and opportunity for all and care for the planet and nature and each other and for families, instead of this idea that we're all in competition? If we all woke up tomorrow with that same vision, how would our lives be different? How would your life be different? Rick, what do you think about this?
I agree with you and everybody else who's called. I don't think very many people know, because they haven't really experienced it, but it's actually possible to experience paradise, absolute perfection. But it's not part of the civilized world. It's just part of the natural world, and we have to, like, merge with it and sort of let go of all our attachments to the man-made world, which is the idea that we have to make everything ourselves, you know? Mm-hmm. So when you let go of all those attachments, you can actually get into a completely natural state of being, which we were all in as little children, and we actually return to that. It's a difficult thing to do, though, so not many people have actually had that experience, but the path to that lies in unconditional love and loving your enemies and all that stuff, so you don't have any animosity within you, mm-hmm, towards yourself or anybody else. And then you have to go for freedom. So when people were doing this back in the 1960s and 70s, we were emerging from a culture much like ours today, and we just knew it was unworkable. All the violence and hatred and stuff was destroying the world, so we kind of went off into nature and sought freedom. And people can do that, but I think the main thing, since most people have responsibilities and whatnot, is, like, if you can practice unconditional love, then you can kind of melt all these boundaries between people and between yourself and the rest of the world. And, you know, you can start listening to other people and really hearing what they have to say. I think everyone who's called seems to be feeling that same thing.
I do too, Rick. And thank you for calling. I think it's a great way to kind of go out with this, is that maybe this visionary thing is choosing to move forward with a sense of love instead of a sense of fear. And this idea that there's abundance for everyone as long as we don't feel like we have to clamp down and hold on. And this has been a conversation with The Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. Thank you for being part of the conversation. You can listen to previous shows at kcbx.org or our podcast at iTunes. You can also reach me at elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. I wish you all a wonderful afternoon. I look forward to speaking to you again next Tuesday. Thank you for supporting Public Radio, KCBX, and thank you to Barry Manilow.